The Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order. Welcome. It's February 20th. We're not going to move any bills today, but we are going to hear some bills. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4134A. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rich Vile. I'm the representative from House District 26, South Hillsborough, Shoals, Sherwood, and Wilsonville. In my prior life, I spent 35 years in real estate law with a primary interest in homeowner association law. And so when Representative Fahey came to me earlier this year with a provision in her association documents that contained a reprehensible prohibition against the occupancy of the home by members of a certain ethnic group, I was more than happy to assist in helping to craft a bill that would allow us to get those kinds of things out of deeds without having to go through a big owner vote or anything like that. So this bill is fairly simple. It simply allows us to address all of those things, whether they're in individual deeds or whether they're in a master deed, often called a declaration, make sure that we don't have statements like no persons of Chinese descent or no persons of African descent are allowed to reside in this project. I urge that you pass this bill. I think it certainly does no harm, and it would make us all feel better if we could remove those restrictions from our deeds so that the next person didn't have to be traumatized by seeing that in their title.
Great. Thank you. Well, thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Vile? So are we supposed to let Senator Frederick know that we're ready for him?
I just texted him. Okay. He's chairing a committee right now. And Representative Doherty is on her way to talk about 4014.
Okay. Is there anybody else here that would like to be heard on House Bill 4134? Representative Fahey, would you like to be heard on House Bill 4134? Please.
And
thank you, Representative Vile.
I have a question here, because when today is the 20th.
Yes.
And I think I'm under Human Services. No wonder I'm having a problem here. I'm in the wrong chamber.
I'll just sit here until you're done.
I'm just trying to find a bill. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right.
I apologize.
Great. Representative Fahey, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, and members of the committee. My name is Julie Fahey, and I'm the state representative for House District 14, which is West Eugene and Junction City. And I'm here today to talk about House Bill 4134, which streamlines the process for removing discriminatory restrictive covenants from real property deeds and declarations of planned communities. So what does that mean? In deeds of real property, there are often covenants, conditions, and restrictions, or CC&Rs, associated with the property. CC&Rs are binding legal obligations written into a deed, which stay with the deed into perpetuity. For example, I have a copy of the CC&Rs for my home in West Eugene, and one of the restrictions says that no building shall be located less than 20 feet from the front street line of any lot. So we have to have setbacks for buildings on our property. However, during the first half of the 20th century, it was common practice to use restrictive covenants to prohibit property from being sold or rented to specific races. So the CC&Rs for my home, which were written in 1949, also have a restriction that reads, "No member of any race other than the Caucasian race shall use or occupy any building except as domestics in the home of an owner or tenant." There was a Supreme Court case in 1948 that ruled racially restrictive covenants unenforceable, but the practice continued. 20 years later, in 1968, the Fair Housing Act was passed, which, by the way, it's the 50th anniversary of that law this year. The Fair Housing Act prohibited discrimination of sale, rental, and financing of dwellings and other housing-related transactions based on race, color, national origin, religion, etc. This law officially made the use of racially restrictive covenants in housing illegal. I think it's important to note that these covenants were not isolated incidences. This practice was widely used in Oregon and across the country. The Federal Housing Administration actually spurred the growth of racially restrictive covenants in the U.S. by recommending their use in their underwriting manual. In 1934, the manual recommended that to retain property value, properties should continue to be occupied by the same social and racial classes. It wasn't until 1950 that the FHA stopped encouraging racially restrictive covenants. Although these discriminatory restrictive covenants are no longer enforceable or legal, the language remains in real property titles and deeds across the state of Oregon. These are the actual CC&Rs still associated with my deed of my home. If the owner of a property wants to remove a discriminatory covenant from their deed, the current process under Oregon law is cumbersome and not particularly accessible to the average person without a lawyer. A petition must be filed with circuit court to have the covenants removed, and then all owners of the property, including purchasers and lien holders, and anyone who could have an interest in the property must be given notice. As it stands now, the owner of the property would have to give notice to these interested parties via certified proof of service, which can be expensive. In an effort to streamline this process, House Bill 4134 includes a change to how notice is given to all owners of the property. The change would allow owners to send notice via registered or certified postal mail, as opposed to requiring proof of service. The petitioner must submit a sworn affidavit certifying that they made a good faith effort to send all owners of record notice of their intent to file the petition. These discriminatory covenants systematically locked out millions of American families from the most common way to accumulate wealth in this country. The usage of these restrictive covenants continues to affect both access to affordable housing today and the distribution of wealth across American families. Passing this bill will not remedy the disparities that were created by our history of discriminatory housing practices, but it will be a small step forward to making sure that every Oregonian feels welcome in their own home. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Senator.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. I'm Lou Frederick, State Senator from District 22, North and Northeast Portland. And I have actually lived in my house since 1977. 40 years, 40 plus years, in Irvington neighborhood. When I moved in, it was considered a bit of a rough neighborhood, but my house is a 1905 Victorian on a street that has mostly 1900, early 1900 houses on it. We're the smallest house on the block. When we moved in, I was a reporter for Channel 8 at the time, and I decided to look at my deed because I'd been told about these covenants. And sure enough, there it was. I was not supposed to be living in my house. So for 40 years, according to the deed, I was illegal, if you will. Fact is, no one stopped officially enforcing that particular part of the deed. But it was part of a whole redlining effort that took place across the city of Portland for many years and continued really well into the late 80s that people didn't want to acknowledge, where they would simply not show homes to certain people. And certain people usually meant African Americans, Native Americans, Latinos, and in some cases, some of the Asian folks in from the Asian community as well. This is something that we've had in our state for some time. It's not a new phenomenon, not something that we didn't know about, but we tended to just accept it as a reality. What this bill is attempting to do is to find an easy way for folks to be able to remove this from their deeds and frankly say, this is my house. People can live here. And we aren't going to be discriminated against related to in terms of what the color of our skin is or where we came from in the world. This is an important comment, an important statement that people can make. And I just encourage you to vote yes on this. Thank you.
Great. Thank you all very much for bringing this bill. Are there any questions for this panel? No? Great. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that wants to be heard on House Bill 4134? Seeing none. And not everybody got to hear this. We're not moving bills today. We're going to carry them over to Thursday, get Representative Wagner or Senator Wagner back. And so I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 4134A, open a public hearing on House Bill 4014. And I have Representative Doherty signed up.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Gilser and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty, House District 35, which represents Tigard and Southwest Portland. In 2011, the Oregon legislature, recognizing the barriers many foster youth have to overcome to pursue a post-secondary education, created a tuition waiver program for foster youth in Oregon by passing House Bill 3471. The existing law helps current and former children and youth under age 25 who enrolled in a public 2 to 4 year public institution of higher education pursue their dreams of going to college. However, there was more than there is more we can do to remove the barriers for college for these youths. After passage of the law, I learned that a 30-hour community service requirement may have a negative impact, creating unnecessary barriers for these youth to pursue a college degree. When this community service was brought in, the idea was great. It was the idea that we would have centers at the universities for foster kids to go, and one foster youth would mentor another foster youth. But that has not panned out, and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission has not followed the hours and so on and so forth, but many of the students are still doing it. But after learning this and talking with stakeholders, I requested that the House Committee, Education Committee, introduce House Bill 4014 to remove this barrier from existing statute. The two most obvious barriers that this requirement creates is time and money. The additional 30 hours is valuable time these students could be studying or focusing on academics. Additionally, many of the students have also worked while they're in school to help cover expenses. And this is not included in the tuition waiver. When you add work and family responsibilities with rigorous academic schedules, it leaves very little time to worry about the statutory requirement. To break in dollars and cents, the 30-hour community service requirement represents roughly $307 to $337 that a student could be earning through employment, assuming that they make minimum wage. For self-supporting students, which many foster youth are, this requirement has real impacts on the amount of money these students have to meet some of their basic needs, including buying textbooks and paying rent, which typically it makes it a lot easier to learn. This foregone earning on top of the time away from school truly is an unnecessary barrier. Given that we passed this law with the intent to reduce the barriers, I think removing the requirement is a necessary next step. House Bill 4014 is a simple fix that will ensure some of our most vulnerable youth can pursue college, and I urge your support. And I'm open for any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your consideration.
Is there anybody else that would like to be heard on House Bill 4014? All right, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4014, and we will carry over the work sessions on House Bill 4134A and House Bill 4014 to Thursday. Is there anything else we need to do? We've done everything to keep those alive and happy. All right,
I think we're good.
We are adjourned.